Welcome to Food for Thought, the place to explore, celebrate, and manifest a life motivated and defined by unconditional compassion and optimal wellness. My name is Colleen Patrick-Goudreau. I'm the author of The Joy of Vegan Baking, The Vegan Table, Color Me Vegan, Vegan's Daily Companion, The 30-Day Vegan Challenge, and my most recent book, The Joyful Vegan, How to Stay Vegan in a World That Wants You to Eat Meat, Dairy, and Eggs. Thank you to everyone who has been reading this book and reviewing it. I'm so grateful. You can find me at joyfulvegan.com and also on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Thank you for subscribing to Food for Thought podcast at iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And thank you for sharing it with others, leaving ratings and reviews, and supporting it. Food for Thought is a 100% listener-supported podcast, so please become a supporter today at patreon.com/ColleenPatrickGoudreau to support this podcast and this work in general. Thank you very much in advance. Also, please visit cpgtrips.com, CPG for Colleen Patrick Goudreau, cpgtrips.com if you'd like to travel with me around the world vegan style. We've got some awesome trips coming up this year in France and Botswana. And next year, well, we don't have anything finalized yet, and I can't reveal it yet anyway, but we are working on Japan, South Africa, Italy, and perhaps a Christmas trip to Germany and Austria. Today's episode is How Zero Waste Has Changed the Way I Eat and Why Baby Carrots Are Evil. As I was writing a new episode of my five favorite foods series, the episode that just aired before this one is another five favorite foods episode. As I was writing that episode and looking back on previous episodes in that series of my five favorite foods, clearly I have a lot of favorite foods, I was confronted by the question, would these foods remain my favorites if I wrote those episodes today? Because that original one, I think, would have been done about 10 years ago or more, because don't forget, here we are in the first podcast episode of 2020, and that means we're in year 14 of the Food for Thought podcast. 14 years. So here's what I discovered as I was thinking back on those early episodes is, would those foods remain my favorites today? And it's fine if they changed, but the answer is yes, but with a twist. So the foods I chose to include in past episodes of the Five Favorite Foods series were carrots, dates, walnuts, oats, Brussels sprouts, quinoa, kale, blueberries, tempeh, and tea. Then I have an episode on lentils, I have an episode on beans, and then I have an episode on my five favorite Japanese foods, miso, sushi, agar, sea vegetables, and shiitake mushrooms. Now, the most recent one is bananas, cauliflower, Japanese sweet potatoes, popcorn, and Castelvetrano olives. And you can listen to that one, although I did already kind of account for the zero waste aspect in that episode because I've been, you know, zero waste. And I use that phrase loosely because it's not about being perfect, and it's more aspirational than possible to be 100% zero waste. But since I've been zero waste, quote unquote, about 2 years, I have made a lot of changes. And so I incorporate that information in that most recent episode. But those other episodes in that series of my favorite foods, I was not zero waste and I wasn't being as conscious as I'm being today. Now, you may feel I'm overusing the word favorite, but a girl can have 25 or more favorite foods, can't she? And apparently I do. So what are the criteria for categorizing foods as my favorites? Well, they're obviously very subjective, but I would say that they're foods that I eat on a regular basis, foods I would consider my desert island foods, foods that are in my regular rotation and that I just love to bits and pieces, both for the flavor, the flexibility, the versatility, and the nutrition. And so looking back, I absolutely stand by those foods as being favorites. Not that I haven't changed my palate or haven't incorporated other favorite foods or other foods into my repertoire, but a lot of those foods really remain my favorites. However, because of my recent switch to trying to live as zero waste and plastic free and package free as possible, I thought it would be fun to share with you what those updates would be related to those particular favorite foods. benefits of living in California. It's true, I'm aware that not everybody lives in California, but I do take advantage of the fact that I do. And one of the benefits is that I'm able to go to a farmer's market pretty much any day of the week and any month of the year. But in truth, seasonal foods supplemented non-seasonal foods in my diet more heavily than they do now. Because, you know, you do your best. It's not like I wasn't eating unseasonal foods. I was eating foods that weren't in season. But I'm finding that I'm doing that even more now. Now, it might seem like it would be impossible to figure out what's in season for anybody, for any of us, because typically most of us see so many different types of produce in the grocery store year round because we export them from so many places. But personally, I love being able to know what food crops dominate in spring versus summer versus winter versus autumn. And in California, we do have long seasons. So it's not crazy for us to have strawberries in winter, but I just like being able to eat in season as much as possible. For instance, I just typically don't eat acorn squash or butternut squash in the summer. And I don't tend to eat a lot of zucchini squash or tomatoes in the heart of winter. It's just kind of the rhythm that I'm in because I buy so much of our produce from the farmer's market. Now, even if you don't get your produce from the farmer's market and you want to eat more seasonally, you can find out what is in season in your area. I mean, again, aware that you might be in areas where there are no crops because of the weather, because it's snow, because there's a freeze, what have you. But speaking generally, you can find out typically what is in season, where you are throughout the year. Now, it's not to say that I'm rigid about this or that I'm not in favor of freezing, canning, or preserving fruits and vegetables to have them when their fresh versions are out of season. And again, for the record, there's nothing wrong with eating produce out of season. It's just that whereas before I ate whatever I wanted anytime, regardless of where and when the produce was grown, how far it traveled, how it was packaged, now since going zero waste, because I'm more mindful of not getting produce in plastic packaging, it's forced me to do things a little differently. So I thought it'd be fun to use my various favorite foods lists from previous episodes as a way to demonstrate this. And this would hopefully help you as you're perhaps embarking on this journey as well, think about these particular foods as well. Because apparently, as I said, I have a lot of favorite foods, so I'm covering a lot of different types of foods. Now let's start with that first list, that first episode in that series, which was blueberries, quinoa, kale, tempeh, and tea. And yes, I'm including tea as a food. It is a crop. It is technically a food crop, even though it's processed as a drink. But that is on my list, and I will not apologize for that because that is one of my favorite things in the world is tea. Now, number one, let's start with blueberries. I love blueberries as much today, if not more, than I ever did. But I'm eating a lot fewer blueberries because here's the scoop. I'm not sure I said in that particular five favorite foods episode, that first one, that one of my favorite ways to eat blueberries was frozen, like a bowl of frozen blueberries drizzled with a little agave nectar and sometimes sprinkled with raw almonds. It was one of my favorite things to eat. I loved that as my morning breakfast, as my breakfast, which is usually when breakfast is in the morning. So I loved them. I would eat them every single day, rain or shine. But here's the update. I've been aspiring to live zero waste, mostly plastic free in this case, for 2 years now. And it's been that long since I've bought frozen blueberries because they come in a plastic bag. Even the ones that look like they're in paper, they're lined with plastic. So buy fresh blueberries, you say. Yes, but it's not that simple. Changing one of my most regular pleasurable habits is indicative of how serious I am about this zero waste plastic free endeavor. And yes, I could buy fresh blueberries and freeze them, but here's the rub. Blueberries are not in season year round, even in produce rich California. And you know what else? When they are in season, they're flippin' expensive, at least at the markets that I've seen them in. And so what has this meant for my blueberry affinity? Well, I eat fewer blueberries than I ever did before going zero waste because even though I'm not perfect and I do make exceptions about some plastic items, I just cannot bring myself to buy fruit packaged in plastic bags that can't be reused, that can't be recycled, and that will just sit in a landfill because I want cheap blueberry smoothies. And I say cheap because those frozen bags of delicious blueberries that I bought by the cartful were like $1.99 at Trader Joe's, and I used to buy them by the cartful. Now, at the farmers markets, when I'm looking for fresh blueberries, when they're in season at the farmers markets, they're like $7 or $8 a pint, and I'm having a really hard time justifying that. Now, I am all about paying the true cost of food. I've talked about that a lot. It's not that organic, healthy food is expensive. It's that we're so used to really artificially priced cheap food. But in this case with blueberries, and it is paying the true cost of the food, and I suppose it's less, I would imagine that blueberries cost less at farmers markets in places where they really do thrive, like up in the Pacific Northwest. And I'd like to hear from you to tell me what you pay for fresh blueberries at the farmers market. But I just find it really pricey to pay $8 a pint, especially considering how much I eat. Now, would I buy them once in a while and have them? Yes, for sure. But in terms of like feeding that habit of eating frozen blueberries every day, I've just stopped. So what's the zero waste girl to do? Well, first of all, I enjoy lots of other fruits depending on the season that I'm in. Now, for instance, I have a ton of strawberries in my freezer right now that I bought from the farmers market over the last few months. I usually get a flat of strawberries at the end of the market day, and I either take them home in their little baskets, or sometimes I just take the flat and they're in the little baskets, and then I bring those baskets back the following week. Oh, and I've given them to other stands as well. The baskets are perfectly reusable, and any stand would take them back because they're just reusable perpetually. Or while I'm at the stand where I'm getting the strawberries, I dump them into my own containers, which does get difficult, you know, when I'm buying a flat. And I usually walk to the farmer's market, so walking back with just tons of containers is just really hard. And then I bring them home and I put them in various mason jars and ball jars, and I seal them up, or sometimes any leftover plastic bags I have, but I mostly just use the jars and containers, seal them up, and put them in the freezer. Now, I use them for different things, and if you listened to the most recent podcast episode I did on my five favorite foods that included bananas, you heard me talk about how I use the strawberries for nice cream with the bananas. So I use them for different things, and sometimes I freeze them with the green tops on, sometimes I don't. The green tops are very nutritious, so you do not have to remove them, but I do have a little strawberry corer, if that's what it's called, and then it removes the tops very easily, and then without taking out a lot of the strawberry flesh, and then I compost those tops, and our worms love the strawberry tops. They love any fruit. They love any fruit scraps. They're sugar fiends, the worms are. So you can freeze any fruit. Like that's just the strawberries, and that's just really easy. But you can freeze apples, persimmons, pears, peaches, plums, whatever. Often, and I talked about this a little bit in the last episode, it's best first to wash the fruit, slice them up, pat them dry, and then freeze them on a cookie sheet. This is maybe overkill for you, because if you don't, well, especially if you wash them first, which I don't necessarily do all the time, but if you wash them first and then just put them in a container, they're going to stick together when you go to use them, unless you're thawing the entire container. So the easy thing to do to prevent them from sticking together is to just first freeze them flat, single file, what's the word I'm looking for, without being doubled up, and then freeze them. And then once they're frozen, put them in a container. And then that way they don't stick together and you don't have like a big clump when you want to use them. So this is something you can do. Freezing fruit, freezing vegetables, super easy to do. And then you have, you know, that fresh fruit any time of the year. I have no problem. People used to ask me in my cooking classes how I felt about canned foods, how I felt about, preserved foods, literally like making preserves or canning, and how I feel about frozen fruit and vegetables. It means that you're getting the fresh fruit or fresh vegetables, again, that were local and locally grown. You're getting them at a different time of year. That's totally fine. Like, there's nothing wrong with that. And so freezing fruit is just something I do a lot now. It's just something I didn't do before because I just relied on those plastic bags of frozen fruit. So once they're frozen, you'll have glorious fruit for smoothies, for juices, for pies, for cobblers, for nice cream, whatever you want them for, any time of the year. Now, that's not to say that I can never find blueberries that are not in plastic. You'll often find blueberries in those little baskets in grocery stores that are not as expensive as at the farmer's market, and they're not in plastic, but I find for the most part they are in plastic. But the solution that I came up with for myself, because I'm a blueberry fiend, is that I recently planted blueberry bushes. And one of them is massive. So I have a lot of friends who have blueberries growing in their garden, and they're in pots, and they apparently do really well in pots, and they grow prolifically. And so we have a back part of our garden where the deer are not allowed to go. And while we recently did some landscaping where we planted mostly native plants, because I really wanted to focus on native plants for birds and butterflies and bees and other native insects, I really wanted a few edibles for us, namely a persimmon tree, a pluot tree. We have a couple citrus trees, lemon and lime, and now blueberries. So we just planted them this winter. They have not fruited yet. Like, it's just been a couple months, and it will probably take a few years before they're really producing a lot. But I have hope, and I'm so excited. So keep your fingers crossed for me that I will be able to grow my own blueberries and then start freezing my own blueberries and have those frozen blueberries that I loved so much for breakfast. So yeah, I mean, it's one of the habits that has definitely changed for me since going zero waste. Is it the worst thing in the world? No, because now I'm, you know, planting some blueberries. And I realize that this is not the solution for everybody, but you know, we all customize our own solutions, and this is the solution that I've come up with for myself. So keep your fingers crossed. Wish me luck. Another favorite food on that initial list was quinoa, which is really easy to get in bulk. So that's no different since becoming zero waste, and quinoa definitely remains a favorite. So does kale, which is easy to buy without plastic. And so what's left on that list was tempeh and tea. I'll tackle tea first. As many of you know, I am a tea junkie, and I have been for many, many years. And I buy only loose tea. I don't know the last time I bought tea bags. I used to buy tea bags a long, long time ago. And this is not a zero waste issue. It's just about the kind of tea that I like. And I have tea bags in my cupboard, which is because people have given me tea bags over the years, but that I need to compost that tea. It's been a long time. But I sometimes, when people come over and they want a tea bag, I will have it for them. But I typically have, for, I don't know, decades now, only bought loose tea. Now, buying tea in bulk should not be difficult, regardless of where you live. You should be able to find it here and there, even if you don't have a tea purveyor near you. Many health food stores or bulk stores sell tea in bulk. So look around near you. You may be surprised. That's one of the things that I have found so exciting about embarking upon this journey, is that things, it's just like when you become vegan, like things that you never thought you would find, things that you never expected, things that you didn't know existed are there in front of you because you're looking in a new direction. And that's exactly the experience I've been having since going zero waste. So Farleaves, where I get my tea from, sells their tea only in aluminum tins that are wrapped in paper. So they can technically be recycled, properly recycled. Again, remember, aluminum and glass still have value in the market, whereas plastic does not. And so the metal is still recycled. So that is something to look for when you're looking for tea, is if you don't find it in bulk, you can get it in little metal tins, or you can find it in glass, perhaps. But I think you'll have a better chance of finding it in tins. So even if you buy tea from farleaves.com, if you just go to the website and buy it and have it shipped to you, you can recycle those tin containers or reuse them again and again and again. Now, I'm lucky enough to live about 10 minutes from Farleaves. And what I usually do is I drive there with several glass containers, and they fill up my jars with tea. And then I bring them home, obviously. And then I drink the tea because I love tea. Did I mention that? And so even though there have been times that I've gotten the aluminum tins from them, I would just prefer to reduce waste, and just in case those containers don't get recycled, just whatever. It's just more waste that I would rather not, or just more stuff that I'd rather not have. So I prefer to go to the store and get the tea put in my jars. It's less convenient, but it's a nice little drive and I try to make the most of it. Now, if you do want to buy tea from Far Leaves, by the way, they have a perpetual 10% discount if you put Colleen in as the coupon code, the promotion code. So go to farleaves.com and then put in Colleen. That's C-O-L-L-E-E-M as the coupon code. And shipping, I think, is free when you buy. It's either $70 or $75 or more in tea. It sounds like it's a lot, but you know, they make great gifts. Tea does. And if you're looking for really good tea, I love Far Leaves, and I've been getting, and a lot of people ask me what kind I get. My favorite teas that I get from Far Leaves are the green teas. I get Cloud Mist and Dragon Well and Bilushon, which is a Chinese green tea. And then as far as, I'm thinking, there's the Oolong teas, we get the Dongding, and then the white tea, I get Silver Needle. And those are the kind of standard, like that's my rotation of tea. And I drink the different teas at different times of the day. And what's nice about Far Leaves is there's not like a million to choose from. Like you'll see the green categories, the Oolong category, the black, the white, and there's Pu'er. My husband loves Pu'er. I'm not as much of a fan, but that's also an option. Now, many organic loose Many organic loose leaf tea brands come in easy to store tins or eco-friendly packaging, like Good Earth, Numi Organic Tea, Golden Moon Organic Tea, or the Tao of Tea. I find those have very eco-friendly packaging. Now, I named Numi above. That also happens to be a local company, an Oakland company in this case. I had my book launch party for the Vegan Table there in 2009. And so they've been around for a long time. They are a tea maker whose loose tea comes in eco-friendly tins. Their bags are plastic-free. And so says Ahmed Ramin, the CEO and co-founder of Numi. He said, "We've been concerned about the potential health risks of steeping chemicals in hot water since day one. We use biodegradable, unbleached Manila hemp fiber for our tea bags, and they will degrade over time in a normal compost heap." So you can definitely compost the tea bags from Numi, for instance. Now you might say, but I don't understand, tea itself is compostable. Surely tea bags are made of paper and that would be compostable. Well, yes, tea itself obviously is compostable, but sadly these days, the majority of those tea bags sold by tea companies have plastic. Polypropylene, which is a sealing plastic, to be precise, is what a lot of them use. So there is plastic, which means they cannot be composted, which means plastic is being used in them. What's more, paper tea bags are sealed with a plastic glue, which makes them non-recyclable or compostable. In fact, scientists from McGill University in Canada found that one plastic tea bag releases about 11.6 billion microplastics and 3.1 billion smaller nanoplastic particles into the cup. And these findings were published in the Journal of Environmental Science and Technology. I don't like that, and especially when we hear about microplastics in the ocean and how it's affecting fish and how it's affecting aquatic animals. They eat so many of these microplastics thinking that it's food, and of course it's not, and it has detrimental effects on the animals. So I would prefer not to get something that has nanoparticles and these plastics in them. And so, again, I don't buy tea bags, but if you do, it's just something to be mindful of. So which brands' tea bags are made of plastic? As of this writing, we're in early 2020. Here is what I can tell you based on research that I did. Now, this may be different by the time you hear this, so be sure to follow up on your own. PG Tips, a lot of people in the UK will be familiar with PG Tips. They announced in February 2018 that they were planning to switch to fully biodegradable plant-based tea bags. Its website currently states that it is moving toward fully biodegradable tea bags, so please check yourself. Tetley, which don't drink Tetley. It's just not good tea. I have to say that. I just have to. It is not good tea. But if you do get Tetley, or if you have it like in the restaurant, Tetley says its tea bags contain a small amount of plastic material, so that they can be heat sealed, and they anticipate introducing fully biodegradable tea bags for its core ranges in 2020. It says its goal is to eliminate plastic completely, but check yourself. Twinings says their standard tea bags have plastic. They said that from January 2020, which is where we're at right now, the range will become plant-based and will biodegrade in industrial composting. It says some of its tag tea bags are plastic-free. They're made from a plant-based paper material that's folded and stitched with cotton. Check yourself. But this is what I've found in the research that I've done. Yorkshire Tea is another well-known brand. They announced recently that they were hoping to release new renewable and biodegradable tea bags by the end of last year, now the end of 2019. So check yourself. But that's basically the gist, is that most tea bags these days do have plastic in them. So those are just a few. There are like so many tea bag brands. I can't speak when I want to say tea. There are many tea brands. I can't name them all here, and their packaging is changing all the time. But there's a little bit of information so that you can make some informed purchases when it comes to tea. One of the best things in the world. I just think tea is one of the best things in the world. So that brings us to tempeh. Tempeh is one of the foods I listed as a favorite in the past in that initial episode. Is it still a favorite? The answer is yes. But unlike with tofu, another favorite food of mine, a soy-based food, obviously, tempeh is impossible to find in bulk. Whereas I can find fresh tofu in bulk near me, it's in water, though I'm still trying to perfect tofu myself at home, and I have not perfected it by any stretch. But I love tempeh, and it's impossible to find in bulk. Now, I haven't bought it in years, also because I didn't want the plastic waste. So what's a zero waste girl to do? Make her own tempeh. Of course, I've been wanting to do this for years, and I finally decided to take the plunge, and doing the zero waste thing inspired me to do that. All that's required to make tempeh at home is whole soybeans, which I buy in bulk all the time because I make my own soy milk, and a tempeh starter. Now, recently I discovered an adorable little store near me that specializes in everything you need for fermenting foods, preserving foods, pickling, canning, what have you. And they also have classes and workshops. So while they referred me to a woman who might sell tempeh starter in bulk, because the tempeh starter they sell is in a little plastic bag, it's a plastic bag, but it's a small little plastic bag. It's actually kind of more like a foil, but I think there's plastic in it for sure. So they did refer me to a woman who might sell me the tempeh starter in bulk. And of course I can make my own tempeh starter once I make tempeh and once I kind of get into that rhythm. But anyway, I'm not there yet. So I decided to buy some of that starter that is in that little bag. But it's a lot less plastic than if I were to purchase commercial tempeh. So I just decided to make an exception and try and perfect tempeh. Once I perfect it, I'll create my own starter. It's no different than creating a sourdough starter that you keep alive by feeding it, and it can be used again and again to create sourdough bread, for instance. So I would just do that. So last week, for the first time, I made my own tempeh. I have a video of the finished product on my website at ColleenPatrickGaudreau.com, and I plan on creating more videos and instructions as I get better at it. My first batch was okay. It was mostly okay because I overcooked the soybeans. They were just too soft, whereas they should have a little bite to them. I overcooked them because I decided to cook them on the stove rather than cook them in my pressure cooker. I don't even know what I was thinking. I don't know why. They kept boiling over and the water evaporated, and then I burned them but salvaged them, and then I made a huge mess on my stove, and then I put them in the pressure cooker after that because I was like, forget this, and they just overcooked. So I think the only reason I did them on the stove and not the pressure cooker is because A, I have not ever cooked soybeans. I soak soybeans all the time for my milk, but I don't have to cook them. But I don't know why I didn't do it in the pressure cooker. I think I wanted to just test the consistency. I wanted to really just get to know the consistency, and doing them on the stove would enable me to do that. but that was a stupid mistake. And well, anyway, if you don't have a pressure cooker, you can do it on the stove. I just didn't do it well. So you can certainly cook them on the stove. I didn't. I mean, I did, and then I messed it up, and then I wound up using my pressure cooker. So I prefer the pressure cooker for cooking things like beans. So anyway, I will try again to make the tempeh, and I will keep you posted, but I'm very excited because I still used that tempeh. I just fried them up and made tempeh bacon. They just would have been better if the beans were a little firmer. So I'm really excited, and I'll keep you posted. So moving on to my next five favorite foods list. The next one I did was carrots, dates, walnuts, oats, and Brussels sprouts. So starting with carrots, because probably if I'm honest, I think carrots might be a desert island food for me. I love carrots. It's one of the reasons why I think I'm just so offended by the baby carrots, because they just take away from what I think is so fabulous about just regular carrots. Now, I used to buy huge bunches of carrots that came in plastic bags. Like those huge bags, I think they're like 5 pounds. Is that right? Does that sound right? Like those massive 5 pound bags of carrots, because I eat a lot of carrots. I eat them as snacks. I include them as a side when I make sandwiches or salads. So instead of having like French fries, I would just like julienne the carrots and then have those as my little side. Sometimes I would dip them in garlic aioli because garlic aioli. I use them to make my carrot ginger soup for my cookbook, The Vegan Table, which I do make a lot. And then I also juice. So I love the carrots for my carrot ginger apple juice. So I buy carrots by the truckload. And I may have said in my five favorite foods episode about carrots that I hate baby carrots. I really don't like to use the word hate. I just find it a very harsh word. But I hate baby carrots, which works out well because they're sold in little plastic bags. And since I'm doing my best to avoid buying plastic packaging when I can, that's not an issue. So it works out really well. So the question is, why are baby carrots evil, in my opinion? So why do I have a problem with these seemingly harmless, already peeled, bite-sized, conveniently plastic bag packaged babies that started appearing in the late 80s. Why do I have such a problem with them? Now, they started out innocuously enough. In fact, kind of is from a zero-waste perspective. They kind of started out from like a zero-waste perspective. There was a California farmer who didn't know what to do with all the ugly carrots he couldn't sell to the markets. Now, listen to my podcast on food waste. It was part 2, Food is Not Garbage, for more about ugly produce and the food waste and the food loss created because of it. So this particular farmer couldn't sell these particular ugly carrots. They may have been too big. They may have been too ugly. They may have been too bulbous. So he started cutting down the excess carrots that he couldn't sell into 2-inch pieces and then sold those. And thus the baby carrot was born out of good intentions. That's very different than what happens now. So I get it if you like baby carrots. I mean, I understand it because they're convenient and people really value convenience. I love that they're popular with children in the sense that I like that they're, you know, it's definitely a better, healthier, and more humane snack than cheese sticks. They're, of course, more nutrient dense than those kinds of crappy snacks. And then I love that, like, eating carrots young establishes, healthy eating in kids, hopefully. So I get it. They're already peeled. They're bite-sized. They're a quick snack. They're whatever. I get it. But here's why I do not like baby carrots. My disdain for them began long before I started my plastic-free quest, which, to be honest, I mean, I'm really glad. Like, this is a case where I didn't love baby carrots, because you can think about all of those plastic bags. Oh my God, how many plastic bags just from baby carrots goes in to the landfill after, you know, just ripping it open and eating them for just, you know, 2 seconds. But I disliked baby carrots long before this. So first of all, baby carrots lack the earthy flavor of regular full-size carrots. Why? Because no longer just the leftover carrots from regular carrot crops, like in their origin story. Now, carrots used to create commercial baby carrots are bred to be smaller in diameter, coreless. Now you think about it. They don't have that core that regular carrots have, and they're sweeter than regular carrots. Baby carrots are not from younger, fresher, newly picked carrots. The name is just it's a misnomer. They're not like younger. Baby is fake. Okay. So they're not baby carrots in the sense that they're like younger and fresher. It's just the name. It's a marketing name given to them because they're smaller. But that's my main reason I don't like them. I don't like the taste of them. They don't have that earthy carrot flavor. So that's number one. Number two is I think they're slimy. Their texture is slimy. They're, you know, it in those bags, they're peeled, right? And they're put in those plastic bags. They don't have their protective skin, so they just sit endlessly in a plastic bag and it creates slime. So I hate the texture of baby carrots. This was something I discovered, but this is not why I don't like baby carrots. But here's another strike against them is they are less nutritious. They're made out of a variety of carrot known as the imperator. So they're bred to grow faster and ripen quickly. And because of this, they have only 70% of the beta carotene of a normal carrot. They don't have the same profile of phytochemicals as a normal carrot. But what's more, being peeled, they also have less fiber than full-size carrots that aren't peeled. Like the B12, you know, and other micronutrients that you would get. They lack that. But again, they're peeled. They just don't have that same flavor, but they also don't have the same nutrition profile. But that's not why I was like, I don't like baby carrots because they have fewer phytochemicals. Like, I'm not that ridiculous. And of course, who would know that unless you looked it up? But that's just, I think, interesting. Four, it's a racket. Even though baby carrots came originally from the idea of using the ugly discards that wouldn't have been sold, once Vons, which is a supermarket chain here in California, they basically popularized the baby carrot. Now, if you look at the price per unit of baby carrots versus regular carrots, they're way more expensive than regular carrots if you look at the price per unit. Number five, there's no fronds. Now, many of the loose carrots I buy do not have fronds. Okay, so again, this is kind of more of like backpedaling into this, but they don't have fronds. And if those carrot tops, the fronds, you can make carrot top pesto with those fronds. There are no fronds on baby carrots. And then six, obviously the wastefulness of the packaging. I just don't like. But mainly my issue is that they just don't taste like carrots. Lately, I've been going to parties and I've been seeing more and more people like actually serving cut up carrots, which I'm so grateful for because I love carrots so much, but I will not put a baby carrot. So if you're asking me, like, if I were in a situation where I really wanted carrots and there was hummus and it was delicious and someone wanted me to have some, would I have a baby carrot? My answer is no, I would not have a baby carrot. That's how strongly I feel about baby carrots. Okay, so what's the alternative? Buy whole carrots and cut them up yourself. Now, if you like baby carrots, you want to keep eating baby carrots, that is your choice. But honestly, it takes like 10 minutes to cut up a bunch of carrots, you put them in the refrigerator, and you've got a great portable snack. So that's just my preference, and I do it all the time. I eat a ton of carrots over the course of a week, and I can tell you that it's really easy to do, to cut them up. And you will enjoy the glow that you get from eating your carrots. You're going to get less of a glow if you're eating baby carrots because don't forget, there are fewer carotenoids. Anyway, I don't know if that's a reason enough to convince you, but you do get a glow, as you probably know, from the carotenoids, the beta carotene, the alpha carotene in carrots, that if you eat a ton, you will turn orange. But, you know, just kind of, you know, I eat a lot, but I don't eat so much that I turn orange, but it does give you a nice glow. It's one of the things I talk about in my book, Color Me Vegan, is that, you know, the more phytochemicals you eat, which is, you know, basically phytochemicals are in plants, the more plants you eat, the more whole plants you eat, the more you do have a glow, the more your skin actually does take on a beautiful hue because you're eating all of the phytochemicals and that does affect your skin. One of the things I also talked about in Color Me Vegan is you may not know is, speaking of color and phytochemicals, is that carrots were originally, like wild carrots were originally red and yellow and purple. Now you can find a lot of these, the variations in color, if you go to farmers markets. You can, like, sometimes farmers will have those beautiful red or yellow or purple carrots, and you can find them in some specialty grocery stores. But they weren't orange, and no one really knows why the orange carrot was bred. It was in the Netherlands in the 18th century, but for some reason, orange carrots became the norm, and even though you can find those other color varieties, they're just not as prevalent, obviously, as the orange-fleshed ones that we know so well. Now, I don't think I'm contradicting myself here, but here's an example of carrots. This is definitely something I eat year round. And like I said, one of the things that I've noticed is that I eat more seasonally than ever, but I didn't say I eat only seasonal produce. So carrots is definitely something that I get at the grocery store year round, period. I do like carrots from the farmer's market because they're just really nice and earthy and delicious. And I really, they're just like sweet and like earthy, but I find that they tend to be expensive, and I find that they come in very small bunches, and the carrots themselves tend to be small. So I don't really buy those cute little adorable bunches at the farmer's market. I do tend to like the bigger, taller, meatier, really orange ones that are in the grocery store. And I do buy organic when I do buy these carrots. Now, once I made my zero waste commitment, I began a quest to find carrots in bulk. You know, when I say in bulk, meaning like not in plastic bags, that was one of my quests. And you may have your own. I'm interested in knowing what they are for you. One of mine was carrots. And so I am thrilled that once I started looking for them, I didn't realize that it was going to be as easy as it was in this particular case. I found that there's lots of little grocery stores around me that have them. Sprouts is a store that might be near you. I actually find the carrots. They have both the carrots in bunches with the fronds, and they also have just the regular carrots all, you know, that have the tops cut off. And then lots of other little grocery stores near me have them just in the big boxes, and I get those. The only store that does not have them in, you know, that are not in plastic is Whole Foods. I don't shop at Whole Foods really much at all anymore because I'm primarily just shopping at farmers markets for my produce. I'll go to, and then I go to my local grocery. Like, I have like little neighborhood groceries around me. And so obviously I don't shop at Trader Joe's either because that's just all plastic. But I used to get some of my stuff at Whole Foods, and I don't really anymore. Because it's just, I'd rather not. I'd rather get them from local grocery stores in the farmer's market, which is where I primarily get my produce. But also, because once Amazon bought Whole Foods, they have increased the amount of plastic they use. I cannot believe it. I cannot believe how things I used to see that were just actually in paper bags. Like, they used to put, like, you know, you find the apple section, right? And all the apples are in their big, you know, big bins, and you see all the Granny Smith, and here's all the Fuji, and here's all the Gala, and you just put them in your little bag. But also what I would find sometimes at Whole Foods is they would pre-package them in, like, you know, paper bags, little paper bags with a little handle on them. And so sometimes when I would go to Whole Foods, this is a long time ago, I would just pick up a whole bag of the Fuji instead of putting them in my own bag. Now I just put them all in my own produce bag, obviously, but paper bag was fine. I would just compost it when I got home. However, now all of those kind of pre-packaged isn't the right word, but instead of putting them in little bags for people to just grab, you know, maybe whatever they are, a pound worth of apples, they're all plastic bags. There's no more paper bags for these apples. Blows my mind. So I don't really shop there anyway, but take a look, you know, whatever it is for you that you're looking for that you don't think that you'll be able to find with that plastic packaging, you never know. So take a look. Carrots were it for me. I'm thrilled that I can find them very easily, not in plastic, and they remain on my favorites list. The next one on my list for that other episode was dates. Now, medjool dates are one of those foods that will always remain. They're nature's candy, as I've talked about before. I love them to bits and pieces. Now, they typically come in plastic packaging, but luckily, there's the Temescal Farmers Market near me on Sundays, and there's a date vendor that has, I'm not kidding you, the most ridiculously delicious dates, like 6 or 8 different kinds of dates, though I'm partial to medjool. And he has them displayed in boxes and weighs out the amount you want in little paper bags. Now, I can give him my container, but it's just easy for me to do it, for him to just do it in the paper bags. And I just compost those paper bags when I get home. But They are just the best. They're just absolutely the best. They're so moist and so delicious. Now, there was a vendor at the Saturday Grand Lake Farmers Market here in Oakland that I used to go to. I used to get their dates before I was zero waste. And so they're at the farmers market and I just wanted to keep eating them because they're just really good. But they sell their dates in either a plastic container or a plastic bag. And although kind of in the beginning of this journey for me, they were open to letting me open up the bag and then put the dates in my own container and give the bag back to them for reuse, I'm not convinced they're reusing that little plastic bag. So I'm not doing it anymore. It was a workaround because I just wanted to buy those dates, and because that's the farmer's market that I go to every week. I just walk down to it, but I don't trust it. So I'm just going to support a vendor that doesn't use any plastic at all. And that would be the one at the Temescal Farmer's Market. Now there's the food mill near me has dates in bulk, but they're not as fresh. They're not as good. They would be good for like baked goods, but not for eating straight. And they'd be fine for like a smoothie or something like that. But they're there as a backup. And then Rainbow Grocery and Berkeley Bowl, Rainbow Groceries in San Francisco and Berkeley Bowl in Berkeley, they have dates in bulk that are a little fresher than the ones that are in Food Mill, but same thing. They're just not as fresh, but you never know. So check your local grocery stores that have bulk sections. It depends on how you want to use the dates. If it's for baking, you know, they're fine if they're just sitting in the bin for a little bit. I just prefer them really fresh because I usually just eat them as a snack. And I usually put them in the refrigerator once I get them home because, again, they're just so good. They're just so good. So that's what's been fun about this zero waste experience, is that you just don't know what's available until you start looking. So I don't know. I kind of feel it's a quest. I kind of feel it's a challenge, and I like it and I appreciate it. And it's definitely stretched my comfort zones, and it's really forced me to make some hard decisions. And it really forces me to kind of face like a moment when I'm like, oh, it'd be so convenient to just get this in plastic, but do I want to do that? Like, what's more important to me at this moment? Is it this moment of convenience? And sometimes that would be the case, right? Don't starve. Don't do something that's going to, you know, compromise your health. But, you know, most of the time, that's not really what I'm facing. And so it kind of puts me into that moment of saying, what's important to you? And what do you want to do? And how do you want to act? And who do you want to be? So that's one of the reasons I really enjoy this journey. So what else? What else is on those lists? Walnuts, oats, and Brussels sprouts. That was from an earlier five favorite foods list. Now, walnuts, like so many other nuts, they're easy to find in the bulk section of many grocery stores. But I'll tell you what's really lovely, and this also kind of goes back to the seasonal thing. I have been buying whole walnuts, like, you know, like in the shell, and cracking them open at home myself using a walnut cracker. And I say it's nostalgic because it's something that I had growing up, and I still have the same nutcracker I had growing up. You know, it's just a little V-shaped nutcracker. And it's one way that I know walnuts are a fall and winter crop is because that's when I buy them whole in their shell at the farmer's market around fall and winter. Now, that's not to say that I don't buy walnuts in the bulk section at other times of the year, walnuts that are already shelled, but fall and winter is when I tend to buy them whole, and they're just so delicious and they're so fresh, and I love them. So walnuts remain on my list, obviously very high in omega-3 fatty acids, one of my favorite nuts. So yes, they remain a favorite. Oats, not much to say there. Oats in every shape and size, whole oats, steel cut oats, quick cooking oats, they're all available in the bulk section of most grocery stores. I can find them in many places. And a travel tip, if you haven't heard me talk about this before, maybe I have, maybe I haven't, I do bring quick cooking oats with me whenever I travel. And you can bring just rolled oats as well, however you eat oats. But I do bring quick cooking because they're just really easy to have a simple breakfast when I'm traveling without having to worry too much about finding, you know, food, especially at breakfast time. I do like to have breakfast, and I prefer to have breakfast in my, you know, hotel room when I'm traveling before I get showered and dressed. So I don't want to go and have breakfast somewhere and get dressed. But, you know, I just would prefer to have some breakfast in my room before I get showered and dressed. And so when I travel, I put some oats, some quick cooking oats in a little cotton sack. And I also travel, you might think this is nuts, with a little bit of brown sugar mixed with unsweetened cocoa powder. And that way I have my own little like perfect little recipe for just some nice breakfast oats. You don't have to do the brown sugar if you want, don't want, but I like a little brown sugar in mine, and it makes for a really easy, convenient, delicious breakfast. And I usually have some fruit with me as well. I'm usually bringing apples on the road with me for something like this. As I said, I do bring, well, as I said in the last episode, which if you've listened to, I do buy bananas at the airport, usually when I arrive at my destination. So I have bananas wherever I go because they don't travel as well. But having some fruit and having the oats, little pro tip there, tip from the hip for having oatmeal on the go without packaging. And then finally, Brussels sprouts would round out the last of those five favorites from an early episode. Also very seasonal, fall and winter. Even though I can find them year round, I do tend to eat them mostly in the fall and winter, often in plastic bags or mesh bags at the grocery store, which is plastic, but I can definitely find them loose in grocery stores and definitely at the farmer's market without too much trouble. The next grouping I had in a previous podcast episode in this series was Japanese foods, was miso, sushi, agar, sea vegetables, and shiitake mushrooms. Are they still my favorites, and how has my relationship with them changed since going zero waste? Well, going backwards, shiitake mushrooms, I love them as much as I ever did. Well, I mean, I love them as much as I ever have since I started loving them, because there was a time when I hated them, but I love shiitake mushrooms. They were my gateway mushroom, and I love them to bits and pieces. They are not hard to find at the farmer's market, in grocery stores, loose, not in plastic, so yay for that. Sea vegetables and agar, I'm not sure if they were ever my favorites, in that I don't eat them regularly, so I'm not sure that I would say that they're my favorites. They were on that list though, so I must have felt that way about them at one point. I suspect I included them in that episode because I wanted to talk about some lesser known foods, foods that aren't very commonly used in Western cuisine. But an agar is such a great alternative to animal slaughter waste gelatin, because agar is basically a vegetable gelatin. So I suspect that's why I put them in that episode talking about Japanese foods. As far as other sea vegetables, I do see some of them in bulk stores. It depends on what you're looking for. Like, I've seen kombu and dulse flakes and kelp powder in bulk, but I'm thinking of something like nori sheets, like the nori to make sushi. I don't know that I've seen that in bulk. Now, I could be wrong because, like, for instance, Rainbow Grocery in San Francisco has the best bulk section you'll ever see. If you come to San Francisco, you have to go to Rainbow Grocery because it is quite impressive. But here's a tip that I learned from my friend Catherine Kellogg. She is the one who created the Going Zero Waste blog, and she was one of my inspirations for Going Zero Waste. She does this for tortilla chips, and I suspect it's something we could also do for something like the nori sheets for sushi. I think this is absolutely brilliant. This is what she does so that she can have tortilla chips. She goes to a Mexican restaurant with a bag, and she asks if she can just buy some tortilla chips from them, because they have like tortilla chips that they're putting on people's plates, you know, or like, you know, it's part of what they're offering in the restaurant. So she asks if she can just buy the tortilla chips from them, like, you know, however many they decide. Why don't they do it by weight or what have you? And she said it costs practically nothing because they're just like, sure, yeah, whatever. And so she goes home with tortilla chips in her own bag and not in packaging. Now, look, the question is, how did the restaurant get those tortilla chips into the restaurant? They're obviously in some kind of packaging, right? So is it cheating? Because in the end, those chips are still in packaging. Well, look, it's the same thing with bulk stores. Like, you know, when you're buying, when you're buying beans or lentils or oats or whatever, grains, rice, nuts, seeds in the bulk sections, of course they had to come to the store from the manufacturer in large boxes and probably plastic bags in terms of keeping them fresh. I'm certain it's plastic, but it's still less packaging than if you were buying all the individually packaged rice, beans, et cetera, et cetera. So is it no packaging? No, not completely. Because like, unless I'm growing it in my backyard, there's still going to be some kind of packaging so it gets to the store, but it's a lot less. So, and same thing with the Mexican restaurants. They are not opening, you know, retail size bags of tortilla chips and then selling them in their store. That would be ridiculous from a cost perspective. So most likely they have like a massive box and then that's what they're using. And so is it perfect? No. Is it better? Yes, 100%. So that's what I would say about nori. Maybe contacting a Japanese restaurant, and I'll do it, okay? Because I'm very interested in this now. Because I do love those, I do like making wraps in the summer and sushi rolls. So I will get back to you. Stay tuned. As for agar, I feel like I've seen that in bulk because, you know, agar is either in a powder or it's in flakes. Now, I see them mostly in the plastic bags, like the little plastic bags, but I'm thinking like I've also seen them in little tins. They might have a plastic top, like a plastic lid, but frankly, that tin is something you could probably use again and again. I don't know that I've seen it in glass, but maybe it's out there and I just haven't looked. So I think, you know, because for me, that's what it comes down to is when I'm trying to find something, the first question is, can I find it that's, you know, in, that's no packaging at all, so in bulk. Again, doing the best we can, knowing that it was in packaging originally somewhere. But even with produce, you know, it's usually just in boxes coming from the farms, going down to the farmer's market, for instance, or even, you know, being shipped wherever. It's usually boxes, right? So number one, no packaging at all. Number two, the next level for me would be glass. Well, actually, maybe aluminum would be next, and then glass. But not plastic. I mean, that would be like my last final resort, like I did for the tempeh starter. But that's kind of where I start, is no packaging, you know, metal or aluminum, and then glass, and then plastic would be the last. And that's what I'm trying to avoid. So yeah, so again, start to look around. If that's something you're looking for, you might be able to find it in glass jars or metal tins. So that brings us to miso. Now, I do buy less miso than I did in the past, again, because it comes in the plastic tubs. But luckily, first of all, I've been able to find miso in a few places, not a ton, but I've been able to find miso in a few places in bulk. Now, Rainbow Grocery, again, it's ridiculous. They have like four different types of miso. They have like chickpea miso and red miso, you know, like from soybean, like very, very fermented miso. They'll have yellow. They have a lot of different misos, but not everyone's going to have the opportunity to go to Rainbow Grocery. So that's number one, is that I can find miso, and I do go sometimes to get it. I mean, I'll do like a run to Rainbow for things that I can't get here in the East Bay. Number two, I did find some good miso in glass jars. That fermenting preserving place I mentioned in Oakland, by the way, I think it's called Preserved. It's on Telegraph in Temescal in Oakland. And so I was really happy about that. However, when I went to Preserve to buy the tempeh starter, I decided also to buy a miso starter to make my own miso, which I'm so excited about. I've been waiting for the beginning of the year because it will take like 9 months to ferment. You can do like 9 months or a year, depending on how long you want it to ferment for. You can do it longer than that. But I wanted to wait to the beginning of the year and start like here while I'm here. I want to be here to watch the process and to be able to document it. So I'm going to document it. If you already make your own miso, you probably think I'm silly for getting so excited about it, but I'm so excited about making my own miso. So stay tuned. I will be talking about that more and more. So yeah, I do the best I can. Get it in bulk, find it in glass, or I don't get it at all. And again, that starter for the miso came in plastic, but eventually I can learn to make my own starter. Baby steps, I'll get there. And yes, miso remains on my favorites list. So if you're looking for, by the way, specifics about how to use these foods and how I like to cook them, those are the episodes to go to. I would talk about specifically like how I use miso and how I make a dressing and how I make miso soup and, you know, how I use agar or whatever. So those episodes where I talk about these favorite foods, you can find more details about how to prepare them. As for the other favorites, I think the other ones I mentioned were, there was a whole episode on beans, there was a whole episode on lentils. As to whether or not they're still my favorites, And if they're easy to find in bulk, the answer is yes, of course. Beans and lentils are still my favorite. I love them so much. In fact, David and I just had lunch. I split up recording this podcast episode, and David and I just had lunch, and I had pinto beans. And yesterday, we had garbanzo beans. I mean, we eat beans every day, and the pressure cooker makes it a lot easier and so much wonderful and delicious to do that. So we put beans in the pressure cooker almost every day. So there you have it. I have a lot more to say about what foods I now only buy in glass or bulk or not at all, but I thought this was a good way to start this conversation, the beginning of the year, revisiting old lists of favorite foods and showing how my relationship with them has changed and altered and deepened. Zero waste continues to deepen my relationship with the things I bring into my life. Remember, it is not about being perfect. It's not about showing that you demonstrate all of your trash that fits in a jar over the course of a year. Like, that's not why I'm doing this. It's about taking responsibility for what you bring into your life, valuing what you already have, and letting go of things that devalue your life or that you can't value, that you don't take responsibility for. If I can't take full responsibility for something, from cradle to grave, or if it sits in a box in a closet and takes up space and I don't value it, then I either don't bring it into my life. If I ask those questions and I can't value them or I can't take responsibility for them, I either don't bring them into my life or I give it away to someone who can value it, right? That's what zero waste means to me. It's about value. It's about taking responsibility. And it's been a wonderful journey. And I have so much more to learn. I have so much more to share, and I hope you're still open to hearing about it because it's been absolutely life-changing, and I'm so grateful for it. So for the animals, this is Colleen Patrick-Goudreau. More to say. Thanks for listening.